Welcome back to another episode of On Life and Being Human. I'm your host, Catherine Colleen, and this is the podcast where we help you create a better life through deeper connection to yourself, to others, and to every aspect of your world. Today we're going to be talking about the first task from stage 8, which is connecting to universal truths. This is how we move out of stage 7, where we're questioning everything, and into stage 8, which is really quite a beautiful and exciting place to be. Before we get started today on connecting to universal truths, a shout out to new listeners in Lima, Peru. Gracias por esa conexión. Thank you for this connection. We're so excited to have you here. If you have thoughts, questions, ideas, please use the link in the show notes to head over to the community page at CatherineColleen.com. And you can scroll down. There's a little form there that you can use that comes directly to me. And you will hear back directly from me. I love getting in questions, thoughts, and ideas from all over the world. Please feel free to use your first language if English is your second, or third, or fourth, or so on, as you choose. I'm very comfortable with other languages and happy to do a little bit of translation work. Okay, so connecting to universal truths. So here we're coming out of stage 7. We've been questioning everything. We've been trying to take our ideology and turn it into more of a set of high-level principles that can guide our everyday lives. And what those principles are will be quite different for everybody, I think. But as you read and as you think and as you grow, take note of what is common among all beliefs, among all religions, among all political ideologies, and so forth. So the universal truths are, if you can find one thing that every religion in the world agrees on, you have found a universal truth. If you can find one thing that's kind of at the common root of all the political parties in your country, well, now you're onto something. And so political ideologies in different religions can seem to be so different on the surface, but when you dig down, the root of it all is really not different at all. So in this exercise, we're going to be working to see what's common to them all. And you can see why you have to be sort of through stage 7 to do this. You can't be in a place where you're offended by looking at somebody else's ideology or somebody else's religion. You have to be very comfortable with approaching other people's ways of thinking. See, at first, common themes can be really hard to find. So, for example, political ideologies, and I'll... Yeah, I can pick on the United States because this is where I live, but I don't think it's terribly much different anywhere else in the world. Political ideologies from the left or the right, that is more liberal versus more conservative, or different ideologies, different religions from different parts of the world, they might seem so completely different that they couldn't possibly have anything in common at all. But the key to seeing the common basis for them all is to stop looking at the level of specific rules or specific beliefs and specific issues and focus instead on principles and even one level higher than that. Focus on the emotional roots of the principles. So let's do an example, and I'm going to talk about religion. If talking about multiple religions in a comparative way is offensive to you, you are currently in stage 5, and that's okay, but you may not be ready for this yet. That being said, I encourage you to give it a go anyway. And then when we're done here, examine the feelings that you have when we talk about different religions and why you feel that way and what is the basis of that fear. Yeah, it's fear. Because fear is the basis of all negative emotions, offense, anger. It's all rooted in fear. And then head back to stage 5 and do the work do the work in there. Okay, so let's do an example. So let's take Christianity and Islam. And these two religions might seem very far apart. But can we find something common to them both? It's like doing Venn diagrams in school. Remember the circles that would overlap each other and you would talk about what's in the middle? Well, they both have one deity. And this one deity is kind of personified as a dude. And both of them say we are children of this deity. And in certain portions of post-Crusades writings, if you take the historical context in there, both of these religions advocate brotherly love for all humanity. Now, if what I just said upsets you, no, they don't. No, they don't. Oh, my God, they're so violent. Yeah, in some parts of the texts, they both are very violent. It's incredibly violent. So I guess there's something else they have in common. There's few things more violent than the Old Testament. There's a lot of violence in there. And there's a lot of anger. And if you look at the historical context in which different parts of these books were crafted and written and influenced, violence was a large part of the reality. And I'm so thankful that it's not anymore. But when you look at the writings post-Crusades, you get a lot more of kind of this universal brotherly love type of writing. So that's what's really common to them both. And now if you've studied these texts, then you would also know, obviously, that on the first page, first thing that Muhammad, peace be with him, dives into in the Quran, is the fact that Allah is the same God as is depicted in Christianity and in Judaism. And if you don't believe me, go download a version of the Quran in your native language and just go read the first few pages. I am the same God. That's a direct quote. But let's throw in something else. Let's get challenging. Let's throw in something else like Taoism. Taoism, very cool. My personal favorite of all of the religions / philosophies out there in the world. Now, if you put all three of them together, Christianity, Islam, and Taoism, and say, what do they have in common? Things get a little bit more challenging. Well, Taoism does not have a personified deity. It's more of a nebulous force. So we're going to have to move upwards in our perspective and say that, okay, they all three suggest that there's a single all-powerful force which creates everything, and we are descended or children of or made by that one force, and that one force is the embodiment of love. And they also say that this one divine force is in our hearts and within us. And this is just one example of how you might seek the commonalities between multiple different religions or multiple different ideologies. Interesting. And a question I often get along these lines is, well, if all of these religions are all basically saying the same thing, that there's this one divine force and we are all children of it, descended of it, and it is in us and it is love, why can't we get along? Why is there so much fighting? Why is there so much war? Why is there so much violence in the name of religion? And I would say it's because as humans, religion is one of our favorite excuses to kill somebody. How are you going to justify murder? Well, there's two main ways that people do it. One is religion. And they'll just name their religion. If somebody else is the other religion, then I'm justified in what I'm doing. So they can sit there at night and tell themselves, I'm not wrong, I'm not wrong, I'm not wrong. Look, I'm justified. We see killing in the name of political ideology. It's less common, but it certainly happens. For the same reason. You have to justify doing what you know is wrong. It's a convenient excuse. Or you'll choose to pick out the passages from your sacred text that seem to tell you you're justified. Anything you could want to justify is in the pages of that text. I don't care which text you're reading. Okay, maybe not so much in the Eastern philosophies, but between the Quran, the Bible, the Torah, anything you could want to justify is in there. Loving people, hating people, helping people, killing people. And it goes on. It's really fascinating. If you currently enjoy a particular organized religion and you have not read your sacred text recently, I encourage you to go back and read it. And really pay attention. It's an eye-opener. So this is how we can start to see what's common amongst all religions or common amongst political ideologies. You want to form your own exploration of what abstract truths are at the heart of all religions. And then consider what abstract truths are at the heart of all political ideologies. And then consider what abstract truths are common to all humanity. What do most people want out of life? What do most people worry about? You'll find that what most people want out of life and what most people worry about does not change from culture to culture, from country to country, society to society, and even over time, it does not change. Most people want to be left alone to live their lives. Most people just want a chance to do their thing, to find that purpose, to carry it out. Most people worry about keeping their families safe, putting food on the table, being able to successfully navigate life. That's most people, and I don't care what country you're in. And when you connect with the abstract truths that are common to all ideologies and all of humanity, this does not mean that you're giving up your current political ideology or your current religion. So you have to have an ideology of your own, and by this point it should be based on principles, high-level principles. And you need that just to get through the day and make good decisions. And you don't have to give up your ideology just because you're examining somebody else's or just because you're looking for commonalities between yours and somebody else's. You can have yours and examine somebody else's, right? You can have artworks in your house, but you can go to a museum and look at other artworks. And it doesn't mean you have to give up yours. It just means that you're recognizing that there's something true at the heart of them all. Now, each religion and each political ideology and all humans then apply these truths in wildly different ways to make decisions about everyday life and to make decisions about who to vote for. Now, how you choose to apply these truths may be very different from how someone else chooses to apply these truths. But the more that we see that we're not so different, the easier it is to live and let live. It becomes easier to disagree about a particular application and implication of those truths. Now, if you're not very religious, start with religion and work your way to harder topics like politics when you feel most, or to wherever you feel most deeply entrenched. If you are religious but you're not terribly political, start with politics and work your way over to religion. And as you find the truths behind all ideologies and you find the common desires of all people, write them down. Think about them. And let them deepen your connection to others. Let them deepen your connection to the divine, to your faith, and to your principles that you've established previously. And so let's do a political example to wrap this up. So let me pick on the United States. Big issue is gun rights or gun legislation, depending on which angle you come at it from. The issue of guns in the United States is a very heated subject. It's a subject that's very polarizing, so that's why I'm going to choose to pick this one. So on the one side, you have people saying that we should all be allowed to have whatever gun we want. And on the other side, you have people saying no one should be allowed to have guns. And so we end up with some compromise in the middle. But let's look at the root emotional basis for each of those arguments. No matter which side of the argument you're on, right? So if this is kind of riling you up a little bit, I want you to examine that feeling and breathe it out. I'm not asking you to change your position on this. I'm just saying let's back up and examine both the roots of both of these sides. The average person who is arguing that they should be able to have guns, if you ask them why? So that I can protect myself and my family. Why? Well, because there's bad people in the world who might want to hurt me or my family, and I need to be able to protect myself. You know, and if the time should come I need to protect my town, I'll do that too. Well, why? Well, because I love my family and I love my town. And I feel very protective of them because I love them. Okay, so now we see something. Let's go to the other side. If you ask the other side of this argument, if you ask them, why do you want to prohibit all guns? Well, they would say, because when guns are around, people die, and I don't want people to die. Why? Why not? Because that would make me very sad because I love people and I want to protect them and I don't want people to die. So what we start to see is the same about both of these arguments. What's at the root of both of these is love. Yeah, that's what I said. Love is at the root of the gun debate. That is what I am saying. People love their families. They love their neighbors. They love their town. They want to protect all these people. They just have very wildly different ways of how to approach that. So this application of this basic truth of I love my family, I love my town, I love my neighbors, I love my way of life, and I want to protect it, they can all agree on. But exactly how to apply that, they have two very different approaches. And that's okay. We're not here today to judge right or wrong. In some sense, they're both right. And they're both wrong. And that's what you'll start to see. But what they're both right about, they're in massive agreement on the fact that they love each other and they love their town and they love their neighbors and they love their families, don't we all? Well, most of us anyway. And Imagine a world where we could start with a common ground like that and recognize that these particular political issues of the day are really just a question of how to apply this much larger principle of we love these people and we want to protect them. Or other principles. So this is some heavy stuff, I realize, but it's a very important exercise. So I want you to take a look at the political platforms across your country, or if it's easier, someone else's country, and dig down to the emotional roots of where each side is coming from and say, what is common here? And you'll find they're both coming from the same place. They're just applying it very differently. And take a look at different religions and say, what's common here? What little bits are the same across all of them? And when you find that, you've found universal truth. And then go all the way out to the whole of humanity and say, what do most people want? Not the people in the headlines. That's a minority. That's a tiny, tiny little subset. Most people are good. Most people just want to be left alone to live their lives. Most people just want the opportunity to find and carry out their purpose. Most people worry about the safety of their families or putting food on the table. Most people worry about being a good person and living a good life. That's most people. Most people are really, really good at heart. And on that, I want to end this on love. That's how we're going to do that. So as usual, that's some heavy homework for you for next time. Make sure you send in your thoughts, ideas, and questions using the link in the show notes. I can't wait to hear from you. Keep it coming. And until next time, I'm wishing you, Parna Asati, complete connection.